Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
There's an intensity that is hard to maintain. The trauma, the stress, the searches, it's hard to explain the toll that it takes. I'm a pretty strong woman, but it is such a strain, such a strain. The not knowing is the worst. It's the worst. I describe it as a tunnel. You know, you go through a grieving process. There is a process that you go through when you grieve. And with someone where you don't know what's happened, you're stuck in that tunnel. You can't go through those steps that you go through when you lose somebody, because you're not going to give up hope. You just have to hold on somehow to hope.
Hello, and welcome to episode 38 of The Vanished. Tonight, I will be discussing the 2007 disappearance of 34-year-old Adam Kellner from his home in Stevenson Ranch, California. I interviewed Adam's mom, Cheryl, for this episode. There is something that makes Adam's disappearance different from anyone else that I have covered up until now. Adam was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was in college. As I'm sure most listeners know, I like to choose cases that are different, uncovered, and sometimes offer us an educational aspect. I thought this one fit all three categories. Cheryl's struggle also brings to light some issues with the mental health system in this country. One interesting thing about schizophrenia is that symptoms are most likely to emerge between the ages of 16 and 30. This is exactly what happened with Adam. Cheryl explained to me that Adam had a normal childhood, he excelled at both soccer and tennis, and had a lot of friends. She also explained how Adam started experiencing symptoms in college and began to self-medicate with drugs, which is very, very common.
As he began to graduate from high school and go off to college, we observed some different behavior patterns with Adam. And because my family had no experience or knowledge of mental illness, when he went to his first freshman year of college and he flunked out and came home, and at that point he was living with his father. His father and I had joint custody, and he was living with his father. He began to steal money from his father, and he was using drugs. So, like most parents, we thought we had a drug problem, and his father got him into rehab, and at one point he kicked him out of the house and made him go live in this crummy little apartment by himself, and played the tough love with Adam. And I was living in California. My son was living in Miami, and with his father, basically. Couldn't hold down a job. And again, as I say, we thought we were dealing with a drug problem. He would come visit me, and I observed some behavior that I thought, wow, he's really seriously on some kind of drugs, cocaine perhaps, because I saw him talking to himself and gesturing to himself, and it scared me. We didn't quite know what was going on. He would go back to his father, and again, the behavior was so extreme that his father basically said, I can't handle this anymore. And he sent him out to me, and this was in 1996. And through a very long process of education, reading, getting a diagnosis, finally we realized that we were dealing with a form of schizophrenia. And that was a really hard thing for me to understand, for his father or his brother to understand, is what did that mean and what ability did Adam have to control this behavior? Because there is so much misconception, and there's this feeling that he could, if he wanted to, he could do X, or if he tried, he would do, you know. But again, through education, through reading, through talking to doctors, I got a better picture out of what the schizophrenia meant. And we finally got him a diagnosis. He actually had something called schizoaffective disorder, which is a subset of schizophrenia, so I won't bore you with the details. But what I do want you to know is that Adam was not a paranoid schizophrenic. He was not dangerous. He was not violent. He was, particularly on his medication, he was pretty obedient, was, you know, somebody that you could handle. He heard voices, and his voices were his girlfriends. So I would see him writing down names, it could be 7, it could have been 27, names of girls that he thought he was in touch with. And his voices were comforting to him. They were not terrifying, not telling him to do bad things, which is what a lot of people hear when they're paranoid schizophrenic. That was not his case. When he was in a psychotic episode, the presence of those voices and those girlfriends were even more evident in him. And you'd see him smile, and you could see that he was talking to them or he was gesturing with them. And, you know, after the diagnosis, he got on a lot of very strong medication. And thank goodness that in today's age, there are those medications, even though they have terrible side effects, they are able to ameliorate some of the symptoms that you have. You know, I thought at the time, if it was back in 1952, they would probably be putting them away in a sanatorium someplace. But he was fairly obedient about taking his medications and going to see psychiatrist and going to see a psychologist to help him deal with what he was going through. He lived with me. I tried to get him in a residential program. And as an adult, of course, certainly in California, and I think in most states, once you're an adult, you have to agree to whatever services you're going to go under. So it was up to him whether he would go into a treatment center of some kind or another. And he really did have a dual diagnosis, which is true of most people with mental illness, because they begin to medicate because they're hearing things or things are happening in their brain and they think that they can self-medicate this away. So it's often true of people with mental illness that there's substance abuse in connection to that.
Getting Adam stable was not an easy process. She had to get him diagnosed and treated for the schizophrenia while also getting him off the drugs.
And as long as they're taking, you know, whether it's marijuana or it's cocaine or whatever it is, then their psychotic medications don't work as well. So first you've got to get them off of the drugs, which we were able to do, both by keeping him, you know, no money. He didn't drive. He'd lost his driver's license. He no credit cards. Being very careful about where he went, and he didn't go very far or go anywhere, really. He had a job for 6 months, 6 or 8 months, and he got a paycheck from that, and we always worried what that money would be used for. But in any case, we finally got him off of the drugs, and we were able to treat the mental illness with the medication.
I think that most of us know someone who is battling some form of mental illness and know how common it is for people to stop taking their medications because either they feel better or they do not like how the medication makes them feel. Cheryl took steps to prevent this from happening to Adam because it was so important for her to keep him stable.
Now, it's often true with people who are on these medications that are so strong and have such side effects that they'll stop taking them, either because of the side effects or they think they're feeling better. And I would very carefully watch that. I would, you know, put his medications together just like a senior person where there's a morning and evening pill segment. And I would, after knowing that there were times in which he wasn't taking them, I would always observe him taking those medications.
Even though they were able to get him stable, issues did still arise from time to time.
He certainly had psychotic episodes over those years. There were times at which, for whatever reason, either the doctor might try a new medication, which just didn't work at all, or he would be throwing away his medications, or I always knew when he was in a psychotic episode. You could see it in his face, in his eyes, in his behavior. And there was a time we had to have him committed for a couple of weeks, but mainly it was handled with his psychiatrist and the psychologist that gave him therapy.
As you can imagine, Adam lived a very different day-to-day life than most of us. Cheryl explained what his daily routine consisted of.
So, leading up to the time that he disappeared, again, he was living with me. He was a very solitary person. So his company were the voices that he would hear. It didn't matter how strong the medications, the doctors would tell me that, you know, they were less present in his life, but they never quite went away. And he would stay in his room and listen to music, or he would go out in the garage and smoke. He smoked, and we didn't allow him to smoke in the house. In fact, Adam had what I consider is an addictive personality. And so whatever it was, maybe it was coffee. We had to limit the number of coffee cups he could have. We had to limit the number of cigarettes he could have. And we would buy his cigarettes and we would put a certain amount out for him because we knew if he had access to that, to those cigarettes, to that carton of cigarettes, they'd be gone in no time. Even though we saw these periods of relative stability and there were times of psychotic episodes, he pretty much stayed close to home. He, as I say, would either be in the garage or in his room listening to music. He didn't associate very much with me or my husband at the time, his stepfather. He'd come down to get something to eat. He'd come down to take his medicine. He'd go in and out of the garage to smoke. Once in a blue moon, he would walk to a park, which was a couple of blocks away. That was pretty unusual. But because he had no money and he couldn't drive and he didn't have any credit cards, he didn't have a cell phone, he was just always very isolated, and that's what he wanted. He wanted to be isolated. And one of the programs he was in said he was one of the most isolated persons that they had in the program.
When Adam disappeared, Cheryl was away for work and he was home with his stepfather who was recovering from surgery. Adam was last seen by his stepfather between 9 and 9:30 p.m. on November 8, 2007, when he offered to help his stepfather up the steps. Cheryl explained why her husband did not immediately notice that Adam was gone.
So, leading up to when he disappeared, he was not in a psychotic episode. In fact, he was doing what I would have wanted him to do. My late husband, his stepfather, had recently had some serious knee surgery. And I was away overnight on business. It was one of the first nights I was away on business in many months because my husband had been so ill. And Adam came in that night and asked my husband if he needed help up the steps. And he told him no, he wanted to read a little bit more. And that was the last time that he saw him. And the next day when he got up, he put out Adam's cigarettes at the top of the steps on the landing and came downstairs and got his breakfast. Now, Adam often slept very late, so my husband didn't realize until about noon, I guess, that day, that he hadn't seen Adam all day, which he thought was odd. And he went into the garage to see if he was there, and he wasn't there. So somehow he made it up and down the steps three times looking for Adam. He called me. I was driving on my way back from this work-related meeting, and he just said, "I can't find Adam." So I got there as quickly as I possibly could and went to the park to see if possibly he was down there, searched through the house, searched to see if anything was missing. It was not. Noticed that the pills, his morning pills, because he had pills for a.m. and p.m., that morning, the pills for the morning were gone. So that says to me, first of all, when he asked my husband if he needed a help up the steps, he was doing exactly what I'd asked him to do, which is kind of watch over him while I was away. And that if he got up early that morning, really early, he took his medication. But nothing else was gone. He may have had a couple of dollars. He would take the bus to see his psychiatrist because I worked, 35 miles away. My husband no longer drove, and so Adam needed to take a bus to get to those appointments. So he would have a couple of dollars if he wanted to stop and get something to eat. But that was the extent of it. I didn't want him to have money. He had no credit cards. He had no cell phone. He had no identification. There had been one time in which he was psychotic, and he began throwing his clothes away. He threw his driver's license away. He was trying to get rid of, I guess, whatever persona he was. And so I didn't want him to have those things. That's why I kept them. So if he needed to fly someplace, he had an ID, that sort of thing. And I didn't want him to have money because I was afraid what he'd do with the money. He just literally vanished. He literally vanished. It's as if somebody came and picked him up and took him away. He had no friends. There is no one that he was in communication with on the computer or anything else. And he could not have had more than a couple of dollars at the most. So no money was missing. No clothes was missing. It's not as if he'd planned it and packed a suitcase. It was cold. It was November in California. It can get quite nippy. He may have had a jacket on. A black jacket seemed not to be there, but no other clothes were gone. Nothing else was missing. He just literally vanished.
I asked Cheryl if Adam would usually tell them if he was going to walk in the park, and she told me that there were a few times that he did do that without telling them, but that it was highly unusual. Stevenson Ranch is located in the foothills of the Santa Susana Mountains. I looked at the area on Google Maps before speaking with Cheryl to get an idea of what the terrain was like. I'm going to post a map of the area on thevanishedpodcast.com if anyone is interested in seeing it. I asked Cheryl what kind of searches were performed because the area surrounding their home appears to be quite rugged just going off of Google Maps.
Well, we called, of course, the police immediately when we realized that he was not around there. So we filed a missing persons report. We began to put together flyers, and the LA County Sheriff's Department also put together flyers. And some of my friends helped circulate the flyers all throughout the area. I mean, they went out within 24 hours and started posting in our neighborhood first. And then in the broader community where we lived in Stevenson Ranch. And so there were, days and days spent doing that. And the sheriff's department, at first they were, which is true. Usually people who leave come back or they're, he wasn't a runaway, but of course they asked me those questions. And so it was only, 3 or 4 days later, they're calling me back and saying, "Have you found him?" And we said no. And so they put out their flyer. We circulated their flyer. But after about, I would say at least a week, And the community that I lived in north of Los Angeles is a very kind of middle upper class area. And I knew that Adam, after a couple of days, with his beard growing and him not on medications, he would have stood out. It's just not the kind of community where you have people like that. And so while I thought, how in the world would he get out of this area, again, without money, credit card? You know, he'd taken buses locally, but that was, you know, a mile or two from our house. How in the world would he get out of this Santa Clarita area in north of Los Angeles? And I, to this day, don't know. So we, you know, we had a piece on television, and it was a slow news day. It was Thanksgiving. It was a slow news day, and I got a call from the sheriff's department saying one of the local TV people wanted to come and interview us, which they did. And they made a nice report that, you know, got out on the news. I don't know how many people watch the news on Thanksgiving. But anyway, it was a nice piece about Adam and the search. So, I mean, we called all the hospitals. We called all the morgues. We called all the mental health facilities. We circulated that far, you know, the flyer far and wide. I kept a list because I didn't want to forget all the things that we had done to try to find him. And it just goes on and on and on and on. We, even though I have no idea how this would have happened, someone suggested that maybe he got on the metro train, even though he had no money, and somehow took the train to the end of its line in downtown Los Angeles, and maybe he was hungry by this point, and somebody said, well, if you go over to Skid Row, you'll get fed. I don't know. Well, we went down to Skid Row over Thanksgiving, and we, you know, distributed flyers down there, and we talked to a lot of people. So we followed any lead. The television piece had a couple of people call in and say they'd seen him, and one person said they'd seen him in downtown Los Angeles, so we went down there to, you know, to look at it. We had articles in truckers magazines. You're probably aware of an organization called Project Jason that helps the families of missing adults, and they had a connection with a truckers organization that put an article about Adam in their kind of free little magazines that are given out at truck stops, thinking that, we live 2 miles or so away from a major highway. And if he had been trying to hitchhike or something, maybe a trucker had picked him. I mean, who knew? We tried everything that we knew to try to get publicity.
This is what lights my fire about the mainstream media.
And that goes back to what we were talking about, a mentally ill male adult is not the kind of sexy story the media usually follows for very long. And because the circumstances were so vague, we didn't think that there had been any harm done to him. The police didn't think so. We didn't think so. So we didn't think a crime had been committed.
We all know that as an adult, we were free to go missing at any time. This was a huge issue for Cheryl because even though Adam was mentally ill, there was no distinction between him going missing or someone without mental illness going missing. It would make sense for there to be an increased effort to search for someone like Adam because he is more vulnerable than other people. He didn't have the life skills that you and I have. If he took the wrong bus and ended up in a bad area, would he know how to get home? He was so isolated. Would he have reached out for someone to help if he needed it?
And of course, as I learned later from police officers down at Skid Row, being missing is not a crime. So even though I was handing out flyers to policemen who work that area, and I showed up at the precinct near Skid Row, they were not going to stop him or let me know anything, because it wasn't a crime. What we found out at homeless shelters, even though they were so empathetic, is that there's confidentiality issues. So while they may encourage someone to contact their family, they're not allowed to call the family and say, he's here.
I get so frustrated by the lack of attention given to certain missing people on the part of both law enforcement and the media. Sometimes we need to look at the positive side and recognize those who do help.
So you get in between a rock and a hard place as you try to get the word out, and you're trying to get people's help. And many, many of them, my friends, my goodness, I learned a lot about how people are there for you in a situation like that. People that I hardly knew were out looking for him. People did extraordinary things for me. Extraordinary. And you just realize the goodness of people and people, strangers who care and are helping. It's remarkable. It taught me a huge lesson. And that I need to open up more to those people. I had to learn something about myself too, because I'm a very private person. It was hard for me to ask for help.
We have such a hard time understanding and addressing mental illness in this country. This is something that we need to change.
And having a mentally ill son is not something you talk about very much. I'll add that too. There are many of my friends who didn't even know I had a mentally ill son, because it's just not something that you talk about, because people don't understand mental illness. So the whole story was just kind of raw and painful to me. And, you know, when I would go out and try to put out flyers, I'd just start crying. I wasn't very good at it, because I couldn't ask for somebody to post a flyer without crying. And that's where my friends just, you know, did extraordinary things in looking for him. His brother flew from Miami to help me look for him several times, as we had some supposed sightings on Skid Row. I learned an awful lot about the humanity on Skid Row and how the people down there tried to help me. Sure, there were people who you wouldn't be around, and when you drive through the streets, you would think, oh my goodness. But you get out and walk the streets, and people would come up to me and say, have you found him yet? They knew we were down there looking for him. It's a small community. It may be, I don't know, 20 blocks. But here my son and I were down there, or my friends and I were down there looking for him, and they knew what we were doing. And some people would call us with tips, and we would drive down there and think, oh, somebody's found him. And I mean, after a while, you don't know what's real and what's imagined. And because people want to help, they're saying, oh, yeah, that was definitely him. Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. And then you talk to somebody else. That wasn't him. That was so-and-so. So we saw the very best in people. It's the humanity down there that, boy, educated me in ways that I never expected to be educated. I learned so much down there. And whether he was ever there, after my son had to go back home, we hired a private investigator to follow up on any leads. You know, the private investigator kind of came around with, I'm not sure he's down there. If Adam was down there, he would know we were looking for him. And if he was sighted the way people said, oh, I saw him here, I saw him here, I saw him here, then he would have been trying to avoid us. That's not my Adam. Adam was a very loving child. He was the kind of child that, well, I shouldn't say child, he was an adult. He was 34 years old when he disappeared. But, you know, he'd help me carry out the trash. He would make sure he went out and got me birthday presents and Christmas presents. And, you know, he tried to be helpful to me when my husband was so sick. That he would not want to be found. While he may have led a very isolated life, he had a nice home and a nice bed and, you know, clean sheets. And so, I don't know, after months, I just thought, well, I'm not sure he was ever down there.
If you look at the area on the map, the houses are not very far apart. I thought that someone must have seen Adam if he had been out walking around the neighborhood. But Cheryl said that no one saw him that day.
Well, we stopped the bus drivers. We posted at the bus terminal, because thinking that if he took his couple of dollars and got on a bus, the bus driver, who would probably recognize him? When the buses would come through our neighborhood, I'm telling you, it was a suburban neighborhood with just single family homes. And not many people would get on the bus. I mean, you'd see it go by empty. So they would remember Adam from taking him to see his psychiatrist or psychologist. And they didn't see him. They don't remember picking him up. Nobody in the neighborhood reported seeing him. There was never a sighting or an alleged sighting anywhere in Stevenson Ranch, in Santa Clarita. Nothing. Nothing. We went to the malls. Because it was cold, I thought, okay, he's going to want to get out of the cold, and where could he sit? Well, the 24-hour Burger King or the mall someplace. And, you know, we went to all of those places and handed out flyers and talked to security guards. And the best people to talk to on Skid Row are the security guards that stand outside the homeless shelters. They see everybody coming and going.
One theory that has been circulated is that Adam hitched a ride with someone. I wanted to know if this was something that Cheryl thought Adam would ever do, considering how isolated he was.
It would have been extremely odd for him to do that, because he was so isolated. And even when his brother and his family would visit us, Adam would escape any interaction as quickly as possible. He just wasn't a social person. And if he had been hitchhiking and somebody picked him up, I guess, okay. But again, I've never known him to hitchhike either. After a while, you just have to suspend all reality. Sort of, how would he have gotten to Skid Row? Who knows? But let's follow this lead. How would he have done this? Well, I don't know, but let's check this out. I mean, you know, you go wherever anybody suggests. You try everything that you can, that you know of. You know, we tried to get more publicity after the piece that was on television, and tried to work with the sheriff's department to put out other flyers and follow up and try to get an interesting, different take on the story. We weren't very successful.
It makes me really sad when I hear from family members that their loved one was not of interest to the media. I can only imagine what this must feel like.
And as you said earlier, there are missing cases where the media is on it every day. It just was not of interest to most of the media. Yes, when the sheriff's department put out their flyer, there was a little tiny listing in the Los Angeles Times and in our local paper. But there wasn't any interest in following up with that. I tried, you know, I'd write letters to the editor if there was publicity about a missing person. I would, well, we created the Facebook page. I hadn't even been on Facebook. And my son said, let's create a Facebook page and let's upload all of this stuff that we know about Adam with pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And so I joined Facebook because, okay, I need to know what's going on here. And, I don't know what else we could have done.
Another theory is that Adam walked into the rugged terrain which surrounds Stevenson Ranch.
The area where I lived, which was up on a hill, and within two or three blocks was surrounded by wilderness. It's hard to describe, but communities in that area are built right up to the wilderness. That's why we've had some fires come right up the hill, and I've had to evacuate a couple of times. And so you thought, well, did he walk out into the wilderness in some way? He was not in good shape. He was overweight. He smoked because he got no exercise. I can't imagine him being able to do something like that. Or why would he do something like that?
I naively assumed that the area surrounding Stevenson Ranch would have been searched for Adam. Even though we don't know why Adam would have done such a thing, it seems like it would be quite possible since no one has seen him.
It was not searched. First, we asked the sheriff's department if they would put up a helicopter. And basically a search and rescue helicopter. And they said, which may be true, there are no leads. There's so much vast wilderness out there that we wouldn't even know where to look.
Something about this really bothered me. Couldn't they have at least attempted to bring dogs out to possibly track his scent to see if he went in that direction?
So we were going to hire our own private helicopter to do the same thing. And we talked to a couple of people who said, sure, I'll take your money if you want, but the sheriff's department is telling you the truth here, which is, you know, sometimes there's a car that's been left at the end of a road, or there's a something that people saw him, or, you know, anything like that to suggest where he might be. And it's very, very steep, very dangerous. I walked around the neighborhood, well, I'll say out into the wilderness as far as I could. It's surrounded by fences because it's so dangerous. But you really can't, you know, there's not a trail that you can follow. There's not, it's just a vast wilderness.
I wondered if the area was 100% completely fenced off, and if Adam would have had to climb a fence to get over there. Or were there certain points that he would have been able to access without climbing over a fence?
In most of the places he would have, and it would be a 6-foot or more fence.
Another theory out there is that he wandered off for some reason or another and no longer remembers who he is. I see different reasons why people think that this could have happened. One is that he has amnesia from some kind of injury, and another is that he has been off his meds for so long.
I've been asked that a number of times, and in the time that I knew Adam, even in his most psychotic episodes, he never lost touch with reality. He could sort of turn it on and off. When he thought he wasn't being viewed, you'd see him gesturing and talking and all of this kind of stuff. But if you talked to him, he could, you'd think that he was somewhat normal. But he never lost, there was never a time at which he didn't know who he was. And would he have known, would he have remembered our phone number? I always worried about that because he was never away and never had to call. Would he have remembered where we lived? I mean, I think so. But after a couple of years, you begin to wonder.
Cheryl got a tip just this past year that seemed like it could possibly be Adam. So, she set out to track down this homeless man in Florida to see if it could be him.
Yes, and it's interesting that between Christmas and New Year's, I was contacted by a woman from Jacksonville, Florida, who for a number of months had seen a homeless man on the streets of her neighborhood in Jacksonville, and she too said that's not normal in her particular neighborhood. And she tried to help him at times, and right before Christmas or around Christmas, she'd finally got him to talk to her. And he told her that his name was Adam and that he was from South Florida. So she got online and did a search for an Adam missing, whatever she put in her search description, and came across our Facebook page. And when she looked, she said she found several missing Adams, but none of them looked like this young man. But she thought that there was a resemblance to our Adam. So she reached out to us through Facebook. And my son and I began to communicate with her that she was going to try to talk to him again, and she wanted us to tell her things about him that maybe if she talked to him again, she could figure out if this was our Adam. And she was going to try to take a photograph of him because the place that she spotted him most often was a Starbucks. Mm-hmm. So she passed around the flyers or the pictures that we had on our Facebook page, probably with her iPhone. And they said, oh, yes, that's him. Yeah, he comes here almost every day. And he buys a cup of coffee with change. So she and I talked several times. She was trying to get a photograph and wasn't able to and didn't see him again. So on New Year's Eve, I drove up to Jacksonville because I thought, okay, I just have to go. She can't find him. I have to find him. So I drove up there. I met she and her husband, and they gave me all the places that they had spotted him, and they had passed along flyers, and I created a new flyer that was more relevant to, you know, that he'd been seen in the Jacksonville area. And we began to, the three of us, circulate among those places. And I would sit, I was able to rent a hotel room right next to this Starbucks. And I would look out with my window, and I sat in that Starbucks for hours because they said at the Starbucks, oh yes, that's him. Yep. Oh yeah, he comes in. He usually uses the bathroom. Doesn't hurt anybody, doesn't harm anybody. And we'll let you know if we see him again. So the second day that I was there, this couple and I was sitting at the Starbucks. Somebody at a Publix, which is a grocery store here, said, oh yes, he comes in the Publix again. He gets coffee at our free coffee stand. So the husband was there. The wife was driving around, and lo and behold, she spotted this young man. And she said, Adam, you know, it's so-and-so, and why don't you get in the car, and I'll take you over to Starbucks and buy you some breakfast. So I get on my, we're texting back and forth, and I get a text from her saying, I got him. It's like, oh my God. So we all meet at this Starbucks, and she's sitting there with him. She bought him some coffee. Not my Adam. It's someone I can see a little bit of why she thought it was a much thinner version, which if he's been on the streets for all these years, he would be much thinner. So I could see a little bit in the chin. And by then, she's realizing, too, that this is not, after I've told her so much stuff about my Adam, that this is not my Adam. But God love her, she cared enough about this young man to want to try to find his family. She felt so bad that I had come up to Jacksonville and that, you know, but I'm so glad we found him. Because as opposed to all the searching that we did and that he's there and I've seen him there, we found this young man. And we know that that wasn't my Adam. And I was just so thankful. Why, you're disappointed, and the tears come, and we all cried, you know, because we thought that was him. So many people looked at his picture and said, oh yes, that's him. He comes in here. Oh yeah. It's amazing. But that's the first any sort of lead. And I guess if she'd been calling from North Dakota, I might have waited till she could get a picture of him. But I thought if it's a 6 or 8 hour drive, I'm going to go up there, and I've got to do something. I've got to search for him. That's all there is to it.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs. And then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
I shared with Cheryl some of the work that the members in the Facebook group have been doing to help people like Diana and Josh. She shared with me some experiences that she has had with people who have tried to help. She even had a former FBI agent offer to take on Adam's case pro bono after seeing his missing flyer.
You just try as these things come along. You try to get publicity. There have been various people. Project Jason is a fabulous organization that helps. I've attended one of their retreats that they have for families of missing adults. The resources they provide are just extraordinary. I used to run a writer's organization, and so I've had several of my writer friends write some beautiful articles about Adam and his story. And a friend from Seattle, who's now a friend from Seattle, but heard about his case and reached out to me, and she's written a couple of articles, one for the Huffington Post. Again, good people who, whether they know you or not, want to help. It's extraordinary. It's truly wonderful to see the very best in people. So, I mean, you never know. As you say, it restores your faith in people. Yeah, it's amazing. Friends and strangers alike.
Cheryl shared some final thoughts about how we treat mental illness in this country. I think that we could all learn a lot from her own struggles.
I wish people knew in terms of mental illness. Schizophrenia often comes on as a young adult. And the stories of kids going off to college, or even the stories of kids who've gone off to college and then have gotten done terrible things, it's typical. That's the typical way that the onset of schizophrenia comes. And so many parents, I swear, when I hear one of these terrible situations where some mentally ill person has killed a bunch of people, or in Santa Barbara, we had a young man who ran his car into a bunch of people at a college campus, and I feel for the parents. My heart goes out to them, because most of us don't know what's going on with our children. We really don't. You see a change in their behavior, but you don't really know what's happening or how to get them help. I certainly know, boy, was I educated. And it is such a hard thing to know how to deal with a mentally ill adult child. It's hard to get them help. It's hard for them to, you know, if they don't want help, you can't give them. I think our laws in some way have gone like a pendulum. And they may have gone too far in favor of the mentally ill person who can decide whether or not they get treatment. We have too many examples in this country of people who are not on medication, who are doing some terrible things because I would say there are probably parents who love them and family and friends who love them very much, but can't help them because they won't help themselves.
I have gotten some feedback that you guys want me to discuss my own personal opinions more in the episodes. I stopped doing that because some people told me that I should keep my own opinions out of it. You can't make everybody happy, I guess. Well, this case is a tricky one because there is no evidence pointing in one direction or another. Adam was last seen between 9 and 9:30 p.m. on November 8, 2007. It appears that he took his morning medication for the 9th. None of his belongings were missing besides that one coat. He did not take his cigarettes, which is not like him. This makes me think that he did not plan on being gone very long. It isn't like he had the money to go purchase more on his own, or anything that someone would need to survive. One thing that makes me wonder is that no one saw him in a heavily populated neighborhood. How did he completely vanish? I do think it is possible that he could be out in that rugged terrain, but again, that would be very out of character for Adam. Could he be one of the many mentally ill homeless people that we pass on the streets every day? That is also possible. I have a really hard time with the idea that he hitchhiked out of the area since he was so isolated, but again, anything's possible. I just wish that the area had been more thoroughly searched at the beginning. One of the things that I took away from working on this episode was that the small acts of kindness can do so much to lift the spirits of those going through the tragedy of having a loved one go missing. Many listeners have been so great to the different guests that I've had on the show recently, and whether the guest thanked you directly or thanked me, keep on doing what you're doing, guys. It means a lot to people. If you have any information about the disappearance of Adam Kellner, please call the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department at 323-890-5500. Please check out the Facebook page that Cheryl and her other son run. It's called Missing Person Adam Kellner. That brings us to the end of episode 38. I would like to thank Cheryl for taking the time to speak with me and all of you for listening. If you would like to reach me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishedPod. There is a Facebook page and a private discussion group. It is private so that your comments don't show to all of your friends. If you go to thevanishedpodcast.com, there is a topic suggestion form and also a general contact form. If you have a missing loved one that you would like to have featured on the show, please contact me at thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. If you like this show, there are several things that you can do to help me keep making it better. First, subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Give The Vanished a positive review and share the show with your friends. Also, I would love to know a little bit more about you, so please complete a quick survey at wondery.com/survey. I promise you it takes less than 3 minutes of your time. Again, that is wondery.com/survey. Some things happened this past week in relation to the Noah Davis episodes. Josh and I recorded a discussion today, and I will try to get it out to you ASAP. I plan on releasing it as a bonus heart-to-heart discussion between the two of us. I know this is sad news, but his mom, who you heard in episode 37, passed away just 2 days after I spoke with her. We will also get to go over his trip to the FBI office, which was quite interesting, so stay tuned for that.
Two years ago, I moved from that home in California to Florida, where I live today. And that was a really hard decision. I mean, there was a time early on where every time the doorbell rang or every time the phone rang, I was sure it was him. And I left my back door unlocked for probably 2 or 3 months, thinking that he would show up and that I would get up in the morning and walk in his bedroom and he'd be there. And I kept shoes and clothes in my trunk, thinking if I see him on the street, I'll have something for him. But then after a while, you sort of begin to feel, okay, I'm not sure that he's going to show up here. But when I sold that house and moved, I left 2 letters with a neighbor to give to the new neighbors. One was if Adam would ever show up at the door, here was a letter for Adam telling him where I am. And if someone should show up at the door with information about Adam, it was for them to also let them know where I was. Do I really think after that many years he would show up at that door? I don't think so. But you can't not do everything possible.
Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.